This is Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tonight's subject, school decentralization, the unresolved crisis. Tonight's guest, Administrator Rhody McCoy of New York City's Ocean Hill-Brownsville School District. Night Call is your program. Share your opinions and ideas with the rest of the country. Speak for yourself and ask your questions directly by calling Night Call in New York City from anywhere in North America. Here are Night Call's special phone numbers. From the East and Midwest, call collect at area code 212-749-3311. From the West at 212-749-3357. And from the New York area at 866-5010. Now from New York City, Night Call's host, Del Shields.
Good evening. As of tonight, October 17th, more than 15 million school days have been lost forever. This has happened in New York City, where the schools are now closed by the third illegal teacher strike since school began, less than a month and a half ago. In all three strikes, the children are innocent bystanders, caught up in a struggle over school decentralization. The term decentralization simply means neighborhood control of neighborhood schools. And in this case, it means black control of black schools. The fight is between Albert Shanker's unionized teachers, the Central Board of Education, and the local Ocean Hill-Brownsville School District. The fight is over this question. Who has the right to run the schools? It is a New York City fight. But all across the nation, parents, teachers, and school leaders are carefully watching. They know that this becomes a symbolic test of the whole idea of school decentralization. And what's happening now in New York City could soon happen in any city in the United States. The many details of the dispute here in New York are perhaps not too important. The key question is just what is meant by the word decentralization. How much does a decentralized district still have to answer to a central board of education? That's a question for Night Call guest, Rhody McCoy, the embattled administrator of the Ocean Hill-Brownsville District. Mr. McCoy is black, and he is a professional educator trying to put into action the authority he feels is his as administrator of a decentralized school district. Mr. McCoy, good evening.
Good evening.
And thank you for being with us.
My pleasure.
Mr. McCoy, the words school decentralization seems to mean different things to different people. Just what do you mean by school decentralization?
Well, when this demonstration district started over a year ago, decentralization at that time would have meant to us belonging to a central system with certain delegated powers to a local district in an attempt to efficiently run the school. It took us just a very short time to understand that this was an impossible kind of situation because either that delegated power was too restrictive or there was no power delegated within the existing law. So we found that decentralization could not work. We had to discuss it from the point of community control.
Is one of the issues, sir, how much ghetto black power the white establishment will allow in decentralization?
Well, I think it can be stated that way. It has many implications and ramifications. For example, the existing state laws, the existing Board of Ed bylaws, are so very restrictive, and the board's statement and stand is that they cannot give any more power than the law permits. But the law only responds to an archaic system, not a new system, not a flexible system, not a relevant system, and not a system that's needed today in urban education. So you can readily see our position in Ocean Hill-Brownsville. There are many occasions when we've had to take a position in order to make education relative and qualitative that are contrary to either the bylaws of the Board of Education or state law.
In a full-page ad that was taken by the New York Urban League in the New York Times on October 11th, I'd like to extract one line. It says, all hands agree, and they were referring in this particular ad to Dr. Donovan, Albert Shanker, Mayor Lindsay, Rhody McCoy, all hands agree that the present system is not educating the children of our city. Now, do you see decentralization as making steps for the improvement of education, and why?
Well, we've seen evidence quite clearly. We've been able to bring in observers who've been able to see, too, quite clearly, that having a community-control-based school operation, we have begun to make education relevant, meaningful. It's been one operation that has been expeditious. It's been flexible. It's been responsive. Now, I suggest that there may be several reasons for it, which are not easily understood by many people. First of all, in Black and Puerto Rican communities in this city and in urban cities across the country, there's been a tremendous apathy towards school because of the compounded failure, because of the ability of this whole project to become community-based and community-involved. You now have people looking at education with some hope, some expectation. You can well see that all over the city and all over the country now, people are looking at education for the very things that we have created the notion here. In addition to that, we've been able to move in a direction where there is some definite degree of accountability to the community, to the children, and to the staff. And finally, which I think is more important, we begin to make a viable educational operation stand up and have some support.
One of the issues that has come to light is the fact that 10 teachers were removed by the local school board. Specifically, why were they removed?
Well, this has been quite a controversy. Let me clear the issue first. The board has a number of processes which it follows, one of which is a transfer policy. I suggest that all the emotionalization and charges of denial of job security and due process is a farce and a hoax. For example, state law protects every teacher in the state of New York who has tenure. And there's no need to even begin to be concerned about it. The transfer law does rest with the superintendent of schools of this city, and he has the right to make transfers. This district, after having witnessed extraordinarily poor performance on the part of a number of teachers, had no alternative but to move to have those teachers removed who, in certain instances, their lackluster performance created safety hazards for the children. Now, many people have said, why didn't you wait until May, or from May to June? You could have waited a month. There have been a number of inputs as to why we moved. When you had in 26 days 28 fires in a school building, it's rather ridiculous to wait. Now, the other process is we went through the transfer route because it did not deny anyone their tenure, it did not deny anyone due process, etc., etc. But what we did know that to make any very basic and specific charges in New York City, again, is fitting into subterfuge and a hoax, because the city, over the last 20-some years, has maybe, and I think I'm being very conservative, maybe dismissed two teachers for incompetence. So if we were to go the route of incompetence and have a hearing and bring charges, we knew definitely that this would be an inappropriate way to go. So we asked the superintendent of school, which is in his jurisdiction, to transfer those teachers who we could readily identify as being those teachers with the most visible lackluster.
Mr. McCoy, we have a number of callers standing by who would like to discuss the issue with us tonight. And just before we go to our first caller, I'd like to remind our night call listeners that this is your program, and of course we want to hear from you. So once again, here are our numbers from the East and Midwest. You may call us collect at 212, that's area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. From the West, please call us collect at area code 212-749-3357. That's area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area, you may call us at 866-5010. That's 866-5010. We'll take our first call from Portland, Oregon. Mr. Smets is standing by. He's hearing night call over KLIQ. Mr. Smets?
Yes, good evening, Mr. McCormick.
Good evening.
I was very pleased to hear you on this particular subject, and I've been noting that you folks have really been pioneering something which I think is on the right track, and I'm sorry that you folks, your people, try to get better teachers, and you really participate, and you get all of this static, and they're blaming you for all this furor over there.
I agree.
Now, I was wondering, have you folks thought of the of just out and out going for a separate school district?
Yes, we have. We've tried to petition the Commissioner of Education to set us up as an experimental district, or set us up as a ward of the state, or set us up under any other kind of educational umbrella that the state could protect us. Unfortunately, either there is not a law that allows this or prohibits the commissioner of the state from doing it, or there is too much of a political implication. So we are really caught in quite a turmoil.
You can't get any cooperation from Governor Rockefeller or Mayor Lindsay?
Well, we have heard, at least we get the overt signs of support and cooperation from Mayor Lindsay. But we also understand that this has become a very important political issue. And there seems to be quite a bit of antagonism between the mayor and the governor, and we are being the football.
Well, I sure wish you a lot of luck, and I think that if you can get a separate school district, I think this is probably the basic problem all over the country with big cities, that minority groups or any kind of a group that is bypassed, this is the only answer, is a separate school district.
Well, we think so, too, but one of the things we're fighting desperately for this time is a little time. We have begun to have some observers come in from the federal government, state agencies, private institutions, to witness the kind of new, innovative approach to education that we have initiated. And I think these people are beginning to come forth publicly and support us. It may take some of the pressure off of us for a while.
Well, thank you very much. I've been asked to be brief, and I'm glad to hear from you.
Thank you for calling, sir. Thank you. This is Night Call in New York. Tonight, our conversation, School Decentralization, the Unresolved Crisis. Our guest tonight is Administrator Rhody McCoy of New York City's Ocean Hill-Brownsville School District. This time, we go to Bloomington, Indiana. Mr. Stern is hearing Night Call over WFIU-FM. Mr. Stern?
Yes,
good evening, sir. Your question.
Yes, in a recent article in the Village Voice, Michael Harrington referred to a poll taken last June by the Center for Urban Education, which showed that the majority of parents in Bedford-Stuyvesant were not for the community right to hire teachers and principals. He also refers to petitions in the Ocean Hill-Brownsville area calling for new board elections and thereby challenging your leadership, and also PTAs at variance with local board leaders. Would you discuss this dissident element in your community?
Yes, let me take the first one, the Center for Urban Education study. We felt, after having checked it out, that the manner in which they worded the questions and the manner in which they couched the questions in the midst of other questions was very misleading to the people. What they failed to also indicate as a result of that study was that the parents were very much concerned with the control of the school, and they did suggest in subsequent items on that survey that they would like to have a voice in the selection of the teachers and the firing of the teachers. Now, the actual dissident group and the problem that we have in Ocean Hill-Brownsville is, despite what many people may think, is a healthy one for us. And I'd like to give you just a quick chronology. Back in August of last year, after 2 months of organizing, we ran an election. Now, if you can envision most urban communities that are composed of minority members, you know that there's quite an apathy towards education. And when this possibility of having an elected board flashed across our community, many people had reservations, doubts, concerns about it. We proceeded with an election that had a total of approximately 1,500 people registering to vote, and 1,200 of those 1,500 actually voting. Now, that would be, in terms of our apparent population, about 30% or maybe 35% of our potential parent population around those schools. Now, after this program began to work and we began to do things that excited not only the community but antagonized the bigger community, everybody in New York City became aware of education and what this meant. And then there became an organization that petitioned. For whatever reason, we are not able to answer specifically. We felt that there was the possibility of the political machinery taking over, maintaining itself. There is a tremendous opportunity for employment within the confines of this community control program. It will have control over millions of dollars for repair and maintenance, and so all these political implications were there. We are not sure that those are answers, but at least they were there. They did get some 5,000 signatures asking for a new election. But we went out and we canvassed this neighborhood from top to bottom, and I think you will, you can find that that demand has died down because we produced 8,000 signatures, which is well over the actual number of parents who actually reside in these schools. It takes in pretty much the whole community, so we think we have total support.
Mr. Stern, thank you for calling.
Thank you.
This is Night Call in New York. We'll return to our guest, Mr. Rhody McCoy, right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Rhody McCoy after station identification. Night Call welcomes your comments about this nationwide listener call-in program. Your opinions and reactions are of value to the producers of Night Call in their continuing attempt to initiate and stimulate dialogue between the black man in the street and his white counterpart. Please address your comments to Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. That's Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. The producers of Night Call attempt to balance the points of view presented on this series about controversial issues. In keeping with this traditional concern for free expression on controversial matters, Night Call invites requests for equal time from responsible representatives on opposing points of view if it's thought they have not been adequately represented on the air. Such requests should be addressed to Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. That's Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself, collect from anywhere in North America to Rhody McCoy about the school decentralization crisis. Call Night Call Collect from the East and the Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And we return to our conversation tonight, school decentralization, the unresolved crisis. Our guest tonight calling in from New York, Administrator Mr. Rhody McCoy of New York City's Ocean Hill-Brownsville School District. This time we'll go out to South Farmingdale, Long Island. Mr. Render is hearing Night Call over WLIB-FM. Mr. Render?
Yes.
Good evening, sir. Your question.
Good evening. Thank you. Mr. McCoy?
Yes.
I want to say that my heart and my thoughts are with you.
Thank you.
And I wish you the ultimate success in what you're trying to achieve in the Ocean Hill Brownsville School District in Brooklyn. And I want to ask a question. Aside from the teaching professionalism that an individual gets in a college that would prepare him to teach children in various schools and various grades, I think that there's something that goes unmentioned. And maybe because it's so elusive and so ill-defined. But underlying attitudes that are reflected for the children, the black, in this case, the black and the Puerto Rican children, I think. Wouldn't you speak to that in an educational sense in saying that this is a quality that also has to do with educating children?
Yes, there's no question about it. I'd like to talk about it from a pretty different perspective and tie it up very closely. In New York City, in the ghetto areas, the actual school situation has been so deplorable for the teacher until the teacher has been conditioned over the years not to have an expectancy, not to have an expectancy of children, not to have an expectancy of the parents, and ultimately not to have an expectancy of themselves. Now, this condition has existed for years in New York City, and people have skirted the issue. They've placed blame. They haven't addressed themselves to the problem. Now, we have. We've gone out of the way to do the basic thing that's needed. We have tried to establish a working relationship that involves parents who have an expectancy, teachers who have an expectancy, and children who have an expectancy. And once you put these three things together, they begin to work. Now, it's also quite apparent that when you provide the kind of working atmosphere that I just addressed myself to, that there is a different feeling for children. These teachers are not missionaries. They came in to teach, but they do have a warmth and understanding of these children because of this kind of new atmosphere in which they're working. And fortunately for us, there are large numbers of new teachers who can work in this atmosphere. They haven't been conditioned by the other. In addition to that, we've had to take certain safeguards, certain precautionary steps, to see to it that each of these three entities is completely supported by professional staff and by community people. That is, the teachers know that all of the professional staff supports them, the parents support them, and the children are in favor, and vice versa, in each one of these areas. So we have a large family of people determined and committed to see that children get educated. And all of these other kinds of negative atmospheres we've been able to sort of push aside and take a real positive approach. It's been very exciting.
Mr. Render, thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you for putting it so beautifully.
Thank you for calling. Bye-bye. This is Night Call in New York, School Decentralization, the Unresolved Crisis, our conversation tonight. And this time out to Detroit, Michigan, Mr. Baker is hearing Night Call over WJLV. Mr. Baker?
Hello.
Good evening, sir.
Yeah. I'd like to ask you, what do you think could be done about the inner city school problem where Negroes attend?
Well, basically, that's all I have. Negroes are Puerto Rican, blacks are Puerto Rican, and that's where my whole career has been. I think that the time is now for people to begin to address themselves to three things. One is having some degree of accountability,
yes,
some degree in the policy making, and some commitment to the self-determination and education of their children. Now, this gives one complete picture, if I can describe it, that where there are school systems directing their efforts towards minority members, be whatever they are, then those people have to have the control. Those people have to be the policy makers. Because once they are, then they make education programs relevant to their children and the needs of those particular schools and the community. The other advantage is, and I think you ought to look at it this way, is that no longer in this day and age can we educate children in a school building and isolate them from the community. This has to be a kind of total community operation and involvement. That is, get parents involved in learning programs outside of school and inside of school. There's a new approach in terms of paraprofessionals. You have to make use of all the community resources. It's a new kind of approach. And if you try to isolate any part of it, you're missing an important factor, and it's going to keep us in the box where we've been for so long. Now, as long as we are now addressing ourselves to the tremendous amount of deprivation academically for black and Puerto Ricans, we've got to begin to work on individualization of instruction, ego building, interest building, And again, most important is motivation of a team. That is the parent, the child, and the teacher. Once these things come together, I think that we have some very positive things going forward.
Mr. Baker, thank you for calling. Thank you. This is Night Call in New York, and this time out to Loveland, Colorado, Mr. Green is hearing Night Call over KLOV-FM. Mr. Green?
Good evening.
Good evening, sir. Your question.
Mr. McCoy?
Yeah.
You made the statement that there had only been perhaps two teachers that had been removed or they'd attempt to remove for incompetence in the past 20 years or so. I wonder if you feel that the tenure law is a serious detriment to improving education in New York State.
No, I don't think the tenure law is the criteria. I think that the machinery involved in determining whether a teacher is capable of performing at a particular level within any particular conflict. Let me use an example. If we have, and this has been demonstrated, a school that is predominantly Puerto Rican by ethnic origin, and 90% of those youngsters can only speak Spanish, and you have a faculty of whites who only can speak English. Now, there's a misfit here. And if the machinery is so locked in, has nothing to do with tenure, mind you, but if the machinery is so locked in that you can't move those people around so that you can bring in people to fit that specific need, then you can see what the problem is. It's not the tenure law, it's just the machinery in order to allow flexibility in educating children around their specific needs.
Have you had a great change in the language problem there in recent years?
Yes, this has been true in our particular district. We see it's true.
I think Washington is one of the best examples of it. And as far as we can determine, this trend is progressing all across the urban centers. In our own district, we're having a tremendous number of Spanish-speaking people move in, and now a large number of Haitians to move in. So we have language problems as well as ethnic problems. But we do have the flexibility, or at least we've taken the leadership role in establishing flexibility and being perceptive enough and having enough vision to look ahead and begin either to plan programs to meet these needs or to set up our own machinery, which gives us flexibility and viability to adjust. For example, we are now training teachers to be bilingual. Does your school board report to the overall school board in New York City?
Well, it appears that since we've been in operation, we haven't enjoyed that kind of relationship.
I see. Thank you very much, Mr. McCoy.
My pleasure.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Good night.
Thank you. Mr. McCoy, prior to the present program of decentralization, there was an attempt in the Ocean Hill area to bus Puerto Rican and black kids out of the area?
Yes, there was.
And how successful was that program?
It was rather traumatic for the people. You can understand this being one of the poorest, economically deprived neighborhoods in New York City. And even in our own locale, the district superintendent's office was so far removed that it made it practically impossible for the people to get to his office to discuss school problems and student problems. When they began to bust these youngsters out of our area, they bust them into areas where it was even more difficult for the parents to get to, more inconvenient. They placed these youngsters in classes, usually the worst classes, because they felt that they weren't able to read or perform academically. And they had all kinds of problems there. For instance, when a youngster was sick, they couldn't reach their parents, and they would send them home by bus, and the kid would be in the street. It was very, very unpleasant and unfortunate. And as a result of that, some of the movement began to create this specific district.
Mr. McCoy, we'll return to you in more calls from our Night Call listeners right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Rhody McCoy after station identification. Next week on Night Call, a black psychologist, the head of the Fair Campaign Practices Committee, the presidential candidate of the Communist Party, the head of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, and the star of the Broadway musical, Hair. Monday, Dr. Alvin Poussin, the Harvard psychologist and host of the weekly NET series, Soul. Tuesday, Samuel J. Archibald and What Makes a Campaign Fair. Wednesday, Charlene Mitchell, running for president on the ticket of the Communist Party. Thursday, Jack Greenberg, executive director of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People's Legal Defense Fund. And Friday, Donnie Burks, star of the revolutionary Broadway musical, Hair. All this next week on Night Call. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself, collect, from anywhere in North America to Rhody McCoy about the school decentralization crisis. Call Night Call Collect from the East and Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And a welcome to the Night Call stations who join us nightly for the second half hour of Night Call. Tonight, our discussion, school decentralization, the unresolved crisis. Our guest, Administrator Rhody McCoy of New York City's Ocean Hill-Brownsville School District. He's calling in, of course, from New York. This time we'll go out to Nashville, Tennessee. Mr. Cousins is hearing Night Call over WVOL. Mr. Cousins?
Hello, Mr. Shields.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening. I'm listening to your program over WVOL, as I often do, and I must say that I enjoy it.
Thank you, sir. Your question?
I have some comments, brief comments, more or less, to your guest, Mr. McCoy. He has mentioned that due to the rather archaic and ancient state and local laws, there's been a lot of difficulty in getting this type of innovation off the ground. I'd like to think personally that due to a lot of archaic social and psychological principles, that our society has produced tremendous disadvantages in the development of families and neighborhoods and, well, as communities. Specifically, my comment is this, that instead of looking upon this experience that they are experiencing now there in Ocean Hill and Brownsville District as an isolated experience relative to education, I tend to think that this experience might prove some valuable benefits to our overall democratic system. I want to wish him and his work with a lot of success, because I tend to feel that the institutions that situate themselves in neighborhoods, not only the schools, but the housing projects, the recreation centers, the public libraries, and all other agencies of government that locate themselves in the neighborhood has a similar responsibility as the Brownsville District is trying to innovate here. And at this point, I do have a question as to whether or not he feels that the total scope of public services, as they relate to people and are situated in the neighborhood, could come under such a plan of neighborhood control.
The answer is absolutely yes and absolutely imperative. And I was very interested in your comment about the social and psychological implications here. And I suggest to you that those same social and psychological implications were the basis for those laws that are archaic. In addition to that, they are the basis still presently for some of the new laws. For example, it's ironic in our particular complex that the union has struck the city of New York fighting an unjust law in the Taylor Law, which is a new law. Now, the housing pattern that black people have experienced across this country for years as a result of the social attitudes of people put in a law that's restrictive. And until such time as we can then establish that these laws do not and should not bind people, and then to stand up and see that they remain or they are changed and remain so, we're going to have a problem. Now, in response to the latter part of your question, no community at this particular point in this country has produced a decent educational system, white or black. And as the spectrum of education swings across the country, people are beginning to see that the only way that education is going to be qualitative as well as relevant is to involve every agency in the community in a total education picture. That then, once it does that, it takes the youngster from infancy right through adulthood. And it puts back into the community its own resources. It's not drained any longer. Because one of the problems we have, as soon as youngsters get a certain age and can make a certain economic advancement, they leave the community. Once you begin to encircle this community, and I'm not saying it's a restrictive encirclement, but encircles it in terms of its productivity, then it begins to have meaning to all those people, and particularly the children. Then you got a decent educational system.
Well, Mr. McCoy, when we talk about the local control, are we talking more about control as opposed to a local representation?
No, I really mean policy-making bodies, not representation. Policy-making bodies, like everywhere else in the country other than in the metropolitan area, elected bodies are policy-making bodies and decide what goes on in the community. We have an advantage here in that since education in New York City is the biggest faction in the community, its controls extend beyond to the library, to the welfare department, etc. And as we spread this tentacles of community control, it will affect each of these areas. We really begin to be policymakers and, of course, control the economic picture of this community. It's quite a difference, different from the subsystem.
Thank you very much. I have one final comment. I'm very glad that your answer has been posed in the sense of a total community rather than in the sense of a race population of the community. I think this is a real strong point, and I think this the fact that other systems, be they white or Negro, have not developed good educational systems.
That's quite true.
It is a point of emphasis. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Right.
Thank you. This is NICOL in New York. School Decentralization, the Unresolved Crisis is our conversation tonight. And our guest, of course, is Administrator Rhody McCoy of New York City's Ocean Hill-Brownsville School District. This time we'll return to New York to WRVR, where we originate our program. Mr. Morgenstern is hearing NICOL. Mr. Morgenstern?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
I would like to say to Mr. McCoy, it's a privilege to talk to a man who's managed to keep his cool under such a continual assault of invectives of one kind or another. I'm going to be a little sneaky and throw in two quick questions. First of all, what areas of information would you recommend to New Yorkers to turn to for factual and objective sources of information regarding the Brownsville-Ocean Hill situation? And number two, why do you feel there is such an imbalance of black and white teachers in the educational system in New York?
Let me start with the first one first. I think that there are several sources of information, several sources where you can gather probably different points of view, and if you just begin to overlay them, you'll see the picture emerge. You can, the UFT has put out a publication on decentralization and on Ocean Hill specifically back in the early part of last year. The Board of Education has its own reports on it, and the Niemeyer Committee has its reports. Some of the latest reports that have been accumulated was the Civil Liberties Report, which I think is probably the most effective document gathered from the so-called authorized sources. Second part of your question, it's been one of the problems, I think, all over the country. For too many years, education for black segregated and decidedly inferior for too many. I'm not saying that everybody has had an inferior education, but for too many. Teacher training institutions have been predominantly receptive to those people who basically can come through high school and get into college. And as you know, there's been such a dearth of high school graduates who are black. In New York City, for example, in most of the city colleges, there's less than 1% black students, or that is what up until this past year. And we feel that the public education system, particularly at the elementary, junior high, and senior high level, have failed the black students, not just in New York, but all over the country. And consequently, they don't get an opportunity to get into college. So those who do come in small numbers. Then in New York City particularly, you have another restrictive factor up for a few years. They have an examination. So the vast majority of black teachers coming into the New York system for a long time were graduates of Southern institutions or for black institutions. And they were deficient in either course requirements or examination skills as required by New York City. And so you've had this inequity or imbalanced ratio of black teachers in the New York City system. Now, the Board of Ed has very, I suspect, justifiably accused the black population of saying there are not sufficient numbers of Negroes and blacks in the school system, and therefore, as they migrate to the top policymaking positions, your numbers are fewer because your entries are smaller. But that's not altogether so. When you have a system that has been so discriminatory, not just against blacks, but everybody.
Mr. McCoy, I was going to ask, in reference to the reports that Mr. McCoy has mentioned, are these reports available to the public?
Oh, yes. Oh, certainly.
I wonder if I might be permitted one quick comment.
Yes.
And find out if Mr. McCoy might agree. Would you say that at the core of, let's say, the Ocean Hill-Brownsville dispute, the crux of this decentralization situation might be the propagation, so to speak, over a period of years by the Board of Education of ineffective teachers in the ghetto area schools?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good percentage of the answer.
Yeah.
But it goes beyond that at this particular point. The issues have been completely clouded at this moment. There's a political implication which is presently on the scene. There's a labor management issue on the scene. There's an economic issue on the scene. But I think what this strike is doing and this crisis is doing in Ocean Hill is really destroying what teachers have been fighting for years, is some sort of professionalism and acceptance confidence on the part of the people who they serve.
Yeah, that's
the problem I see at the moment.
And I think the tail end of the whole thing, tragically, is, to quote the title of Jonathan Kozol's book, For the Kid's Death at an Early Age, unfortunately.
I would agree.
Yes.
Mr. Morgenstern.
It's a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you for calling.
Good night, sir.
This is Night Call in New York, and tonight, School Decentralization, the Unresolved Crisis. We'll return to our guest, Mr. Rody McCoy, right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Rody McCoy after station identification. Tomorrow night on Night Call, can Hollywood tell it like it is? Motion picture producer, writer, director Jules Dawson says yes as he answers your questions from Paris about his new film, Uptight. It's a remake of The Informer, only as far as the plot line goes. The scene is no longer Ireland in the midst of revolution. It's the American black ghetto right now, and the cast is black. It's an inside look at a militant group deciding nonviolence no longer works after Martin Luther King is killed, and the rioting and looting and killing that follow, and the way the black community deals with one of its own informers. Can Hollywood tell it like it is about the new movie Uptight with filmmaker Jules Dawson live from Paris, our first overseas guest, tomorrow night on Night Call. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself, collect from anywhere in North America to Rhody McCoy about the school decentralization crisis. Call Night Call Collect from the East and Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-3357. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And we return to our guest, Mr. Rhody McCoy. And just before we go out to Maryland as well as Iowa, Mr. McCoy, inasmuch as the Ocean Hill-Brownsville district has been set up as an experiment, an attempt to explore to find out if such a program can work, why is it that more sympathy and there isn't more giving by the United Federation of Teachers and the Board of Education itself in attempting to make this experiment work, or at least to explore it to its fullest, as opposed to what seems to be that there is no interest?
Well, let me try to hit it from three sides quickly, and I'm glad for the opportunity. First of all, I think that there was so much deceit perpetrated on the community. For example, the Board of Ed had said it was in favor of decentralization. The very first move made against this project had to do with the appointment of black and Puerto Rican supervisors. And this was an action taken by the Council of Supervisors Association, which really are, in effect, the top-line policymakers of the Board of Education, took this to court immediately, which is still in court, and they claim civil service. Now, I say to you, any law, and I think this has been true in our Supreme Court, any law that works to the detriment of another group bears some overhauling. Let's take it from the UFT's point of view. UFT claimed to be in favor of decentralization, and fought the legislators and literally killed the decentralization bill in Albany with or without Ocean Hill-Brownsville's help. And the reason for it is because the union wants to stay intact. That's part one. The union also has a close alliance with the Central Labor Council, and there are implications here that if a community under decentralization has control of the funds, particularly the millions of dollars in repair and maintenance, then it would have some impact on the labor movement. You'd have to open up these labor unions to allow minority members in. They would have controls, policy-making voices over contracts. And I suggest to you, some of the big contractors right now are courting the residents of the black community. But let me make the last implication, and I think this is the one that disturbs us most. We stayed away from any innuendos and any mudraking as related to racism, but it has suddenly come out into the forefront, some of the demands made by Mr. Shanker. Let me use one or two. Tonight, I understand, with his tremendous support that he received, has threatened to invade a black community with thousands of teachers to shut it down. Now, this is basically a white union leader who has appealed to the white middle class, because that's what the teachers are. And out of that has come such tremendous racial hatred and polarization that they are willing to sacrifice the 70% of our teachers who are white to keep that pressure and control, so that any black community that wanted to attempt to educate its children would see what the white power structure would do to it. Let me go one step beyond. Mr. Shanker claims due process and job security and so forth and so on. He's demanding the ouster of the governing board, which is the only elected governing board in the city, or one of three, I should say. And the ouster of the unit administrator. Where is his due process? Or where is his stand? If it isn't racist, then somebody needs to explain it to the public. We've talked to a number of labor leaders, and labor leaders say that he has been, Mr. Shanker, that is, has been most instrumental in rallying the labor movement behind him on this
job security and due process bit, and behind that, all of the racist attitudes that labor has had for years can now be safely supported. I mean, they can imply and affect all of their racial hatreds behind this due process and job security bit. It has really come out into the open, and the people in this city are beginning to look at it for what it really is. The real issue that originally was on the forefront of due process has been long gone. It is now purely a black versus white issue, and they cannot see any opportunity where the minority members of this city begin to invade and infiltrate the policy-making levels in the city of New York, despite the fact that it's right in their own community.
Mr. McCoy, we'll go out to Bethesda, Maryland. Mr. Loeb is hearing Night Call over WAMU from Washington. Mr. Loeb?
Yes,
Good evening, sir.
Excuse me. I'd like to ask Mr. McCoy what the differences are between his particular district and the other two districts, which are also experimental, I understand, in New York, and why the trouble seems to be in Ocean Hill, what the factors would be that are different in the various districts.
Well, I don't know if I can define them all so specifically for you in such a short time, but in the Two Bridges project in the Lower East Side, it was pretty much, well, let's put it another way. They didn't start out with any vacancies, either as teachers or administrators. Theirs was a pretty intact district. Two Bridges also was, in their formative stage, were closely allied with the teachers union. In 201, which is in Harlem, they had the controversial 201 school, and as such, they had no vacancies and on the administrative or teacher level prior to their inception. The difference is in Ocean Hill, Brownsville, when we came in, we had four vacant principalships. We've had principals out there who've been in absentia for over 7 years and still carried on a payroll. We had close to a 45% turnover in staff. I tried to give you some general differences. In the Two Bridges operation, it's predominantly Oriental and black, and then Puerto Rican and white. It's a pretty cosmopolitan community. In Central Harlem, it's predominantly black and Puerto Rican, and in Brownsville, it's predominantly black and Puerto Rican.
So you think the difference was mainly the fact that you had a larger personnel turnover with more opportunity for antagonism?
That may be one part. I would say that we were in a position where we had to move and begin to educate children and had to initiate programs. We've never been, I think this point ought to be made clear because I get this implication wherever we talk, is that we're not anti-anything. We're just pro-children. But we had this opportunity and had to move, and we had the election. Our governing board was elected before any other. We were in position in September to operate, and therefore we proceeded to operate. So as we progressed, our demands got greater and our needs were greater, and therefore we have more confrontations with the Board of Education.
Mr. Loeb, thank you for calling, sir. Thank you. This time out to West Branch, Iowa. Mrs. Glassberg is hearing Night Call over WSUI. Mrs. Glassberg?
Yes.
Good evening.
Good evening. I'd like to ask Mr. McCoy. He said that in the beginning of the program that there were 26 fires in 28 days. I'd like to know some more about the beginning of this whole controversy and what he meant by the 26 fires. Who started them? Was he really talking about fires? What was going on?
Mrs. Glassberg, I'm going to ask Mr. McCoy to answer you, but I'm going to ask you to hang up because your line is very, very poor.
Okay. And,
thank you. Mr. McCoy?
Yes. There were actually 26 fires set. I don't want to hold the number 26 as absolute. It may have been 23 or 28. But fires set in classrooms by students that were, one, either ignored by the professional staff or were not observed by the professional staff or not reported by the professional staff. There were chairs thrown out the windows. Paint jars thrown out of the windows and so forth, where no reports came to the principal. On occasion, the principal would come into the classroom or his supervisory staff and find the teacher either completely disinterested or unaware or just sitting there watching. And if this kind of lackluster performance and involvement just led to chaotic conditions and hazardous conditions, therefore we had to move.
This time out to Sacramento, California, Mr. Hess is hearing night call over KERS. Mr. Hess?
Yes, Mr. Shields.
Good evening, sir. Your question.
Good evening. I'd like you to ask Mr. McCoy what role he thinks the PTA should play in civil rights.
Well, I think that since the PTA is an organized body in the school complex, and it's made up of people who are concerned with civil rights, it should be an active participant in it.
Uh-huh. Does that answer your question, sir?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for calling. Mr. McCoy, we have just about a minute left. And in the early part of the program, you said there have been 15 million school days lost. If and when this particular issue is settled, what will happen? Is any possibility of these days being made up for the kids here in New York?
I find myself in a very peculiar position. My schools have been open. We've lost very little, if any, instruction for those kids who attended, and for those who were not in attendance as regular, we've been making up time by extending the school day and setting up specific services. And I feel very concerned about the rest of the students in the city of New York.
Has the controversy affected the students in any way? In your district?
In our district, I think that these youngsters had a first-hand learning experience. And I think that they are both more sophisticated, more knowledgeable, and indeed more concerned. And that goes down to small children in the elementary grades. I think it's been a very healthy kind of thing, although we wish it had not happened, but a healthy kind of thing in terms of youngsters being aware, youngsters playing a part in, as well as the community people playing a part in the determination of where their community is going to go and what their needs are going to be and how they will be answered.
If the United Federation of Teachers were to give in on the transfer of the teachers, would this be a significant move in terms of resolving the crisis?
Well, I really wouldn't attempt to predict what the UFT could or couldn't do. I think that they have a problem. They probably have two things happening out of today's demonstration, which I think they'll probably attempt to deceive the public.
Mr. McCoy, I want to thank you for being our guest tonight on Night Call.
Okay.
This is Del Shields in New York. Good night and peace.
Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tomorrow night, same time, same station, filmmaker Jules Dassin. Can Hollywood tell it like it is? From Paris, France, Night Call's first overseas guest. Listen tomorrow night, discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, American Jewish Committee, and Urban Coalition. We'll be right back.